speaking. Anybody who wants to come up, open mic, and say a few words about why they're here today, please start to kind of gather up here, and we'll do that after this. So please welcome Jeremy.
Thank you so much. Now, you know, to start off with, I wanted to say, you know, no kings means no kings. I understand that some of the organizers might have felt hesitant, you know, to call this protest No Kings when we're all immigrants living in a country that happens to be a constitutional monarchy. Some sort of respect. But we are standing here in the Republic of Amsterdam. And if you want to say No Kings. Feel free. For that matter, the histories of the USA and the Netherlands are more intertwined than many people may think when it comes to casting off kings. In 1581, the Estates General of the Netherlands, the Parliament of the United Provinces, signed the Plakkaat der Verlatinge, the Act of Abjuration, declaring independence from King Philip II of Spain. They made use of a legal argument that there is an implicit contract between ruler and ruled. The king gives his protection, and in return his subjects owe him their allegiance. But when the king no longer gives protection, then the king has become a tyrant, breaking the contract, meaning that his subjects no longer owe him their allegiance. When Thomas Jefferson was writing the Declaration of Independence, he made use of the same legal argument, which by that time was something of a meme in the world, in his indictment of King George III, enumerating all the ways in which the king had wronged the American colonists as proof that he had not given them any protection and therefore that he was a tyrant, undeserving of their allegiance. Now, actually, in reality, Great Britain by this point was already a constitutional monarchy. Ever since the Glorious Revolution, when, of all things, the British Parliament put a Dutch king on the throne in order to, like, ensure a Protestant succession. So while King George did certainly have his flaws, in reality, his power was limited and defined by the British Parliament. So Jefferson's indictment was actually directed against the British Parliament taxing and burdening the American colonists and the failure of the king to protect his American subjects against Parliament. It was essentially criticism of the failure of the British system to make the executive branch an effective balance against the legislative branch. Well, now we see that it's gone in the opposite direction in the U.S. Mad King Donald is actually much more of a tyrant than Mad King George was. Let's be honest, though. Both of those declarations of independence were drafted essentially by the boardroom bros of their days. Not much different than today's tech or crypto bros. The Dutch bros calling the shots in the Estates General were the wealthy patrician merchants, many of whose portraits hang right over there in the Rijksmuseum. They went on as the Dutch Republic to profit handsomely from colonization, genocide, and slavery. This is the wealth that built this beautiful city. The American bros were the descendants of fortune seekers from Britain who were living it up in North America, making a fortune through genocide and displacement of the indigenous population and through enslaving Africans to work on their plantations and produce cotton for their textile mills. Both of these sets of bros were basically butthurt about being beholden to a faraway monarch. They wanted to take their affairs into their own hands, and so they did. It's actually only through an accident of history that the Netherlands ended up becoming a monarchy, but I can stand here and still say that the same argument holds. You can't expect even a benevolent king to be a source of protection. In the Dutch constitutional monarchy, if there ended up being a majority in parliament made up of the fascist political parties led by Geert Wilders, Thierry Baudet, Lodewijk de Vos, Joost Eerdmans, Annabel Nanninga, Guy Markeschouwer, and Mona Keizer, who, by the way, all have their own TV network called Ongehoord Nederland, which is over there with their microphone cap with the ON on it. They're trying to interview people and get sound bites to make you look stupid, so watch out for them. Be aware of what they're doing. So if they got a majority in Parliament and they started passing their laws, King Willem Alexander would be powerless to protect us. There's nothing about the Dutch Constitution that stops him from putting his signature under their laws. So you can't expect one person to save you. So that's also why we still say, no kings!
No kings!
A Declaration of Independence by itself is not enough to build a just social order. Neither is pure democracy by itself. Alexis de Tocqueville put his finger on this in his book Democracy in America with what he called the tyranny of the majority. When a self-proclaimed majority runs things and influences public opinion, it can be just as tyrannical for dissidents and other minorities. So the promise of the Declaration of Independence, that everyone is created equal, only started to be realized after the Civil War, with Reconstruction, the Constitution was amended to abolish slavery and introduce birthright citizenship. These were legal norms that meant that anyone born in the USA could say, I am a citizen, and claim freedom from oppression. But the white bros, fearful of losing their privilege, were not having it. A nearly century-long backlash begun, with terrorist organizations like the Ku Klux Klan and states introducing Jim Crow. And it was not until the 1960s that the Constitution began to mean something, when freedom fighters fought back against state laws by invoking their citizenship before the courts. The Supreme Court, given the chance to issue rulings, developed a line of case law that was inspirational to the rest of the world. This was the second Reconstruction. Now, however, we're dealing with another backlash. And guess who it is again? The bros. It's the same goddamn men all over again. An unholy alliance of robber baron capitalists and white supremacists. They're doing their best to control the media and public opinion and create a tyrannical regime out of their so-called majority. They've captured the Supreme Court. They don't want any judges getting in their way. They want to get rid of birthright citizenship. They cheer the destruction of the rules-based world order. As Jeffrey Epstein wrote in an email to Peter Thiel, Brexit, just the beginning. Return to tribalism. Counter to globalization. Amazing new alliances. Not just in the United States, but here as well. Just last week, two fascist members of the Dutch parliament called for the censure of a judge who refers too many cases to the EU Court of Justice, because those cases and the supremacy of EU law get in the way of the Dutch government being able to bully immigrants at will. One of those cases that the judge referred that I had the privilege to assist with was a case against the Netherlands for trying to deport one of its own citizens, a young Dutch child with learning disabilities, whose only crime was that his Moroccan mother is an irregular migrant. The IND suggested before the EU court, in a direct implementation of Geert Wilders' campaign promise, wil u minder Marokkanen dan gaan we naar voor je regelen, that this child and his father should just leave the Netherlands, go back with the mother to where she came from, and go to school in another country. But because of EU law, this child can say to his own country, I am a citizen. I am an EU citizen, and you can't do this to me. This is the promise. This is why democracy, without the rule of law, without inviolable rights of citizens and fair treatment for immigrants, is worthless. That's also why we say no kings. No kings. I stand here today as an immigrant. I stand here as what J.D. Vance calls a heritage American. I am a direct descendant of 17th century settlers from Great Britain, who enslaved, raped, and genocided so that they could sit back and profit from their plantations in Maryland. I am the heir of 13 generations of social capital that was so created. But I am determined not to sit back and benefit from it, but to use it to fight for social justice. Even if you yourself are not a direct descendant of enslavers, if you are white, think about how you may be benefiting from the system they set up for you. I peaced out from the United States in 2001 because it was not the country for me, after George W. Bush got elected as well. Although I did like to visit every once in a while. But now I'm not even going there to visit, outside of family emergencies. Why? Because I know that if I go there, it will still feel kind of normal. That's what they want it to feel like for people who look like me. People who don't run the risk of a Kavanaugh stop, of being asked to show their citizenship papers based on their appearance. But we don't come from a normal country anymore, if we ever did. Going to the U.S. on vacation is now no different than going to Russia or Saudi Arabia on vacation. Countries based on totalitarianism, subjugation, and exploitation. And if that's not enough reason to boycott visiting the U.S., think about the fact that you can't even be sure if your plane is going to land safely there, thanks to the affirmative action programs that the Trump regime has introduced to promote incompetent white men at the FAA and other government agencies. Donald Trump will be gone someday. But it's time to think about how it's time to dismantle the system that created him with a third Reconstruction. Yeah. And in the Netherlands, don't just sit back and enjoy the protections and privileges that the system gives you. Use them to speak out, to be a pain in the ass, to be ongezellig. If people try to tell you that you're not really an immigrant, you're an expat, yes, and therefore somehow superior to other immigrants in the Netherlands, say something. Yeah. Push back. Yeah. Tell them they're wrong. Woo. Get involved. Reach out. Find out what you can do to help resist the growth of fascism here in the USA and everywhere in the world. Tunit, Nunit, Neutmeer Fascisma. Black Lives Matter. No kings and fuck ice. Thank you.
That was amazing. Preach. Preach. And this feels like the perfect moment. You've thought of what you want to say. So anybody who wants to speak about why they're here today, what this protest, what this moment together means to you, please come up and please say a few words. Yes. Come on up. Yes.
Okay. Hi, I'm Maria, and I'm from the United States. I'm on vacation, so morning at the Van Gogh, afternoon at a protest in Amsterdam. I've been to every No Kings protest in the United States, so this is really emotional. Thank you all so much for supporting us. I promise you there's more of us than there are of them, and we are doing everything we can. We are doing everything we can to make sure that the midterms are safe and that in another few years we can get this administration out. But I just wanted to say thank you. You have no idea what it means to us in the U.S. when we see it around the world, because we all hate Trump and we all want him out. So thank you. One thing I tell my friends in the United States, when things seem overwhelming and you don't know what you can do, just do one nice thing for somebody in your little part of the world, because it makes a big difference and it has a ripple effect. So thank you.
Hi, I'm Mara. My friend Beth texted me while I was bringing my son home from his soccer game and said, I'm headed to Amsterdam for the protest against Trump. And I immediately rang her up and said, oh my God, tell me where to be there. I will be late, but I'll be there. I'm a proud northern Minnesota girl that has been living in this country for the better part of 25 years. If for the extra health Nederland and for the health Americans, I want to be able to be proud of where I'm from. But the biggest reason I'm here is to give a voice to those that do not have one. I stand in solidarity with everyone here, with everyone there, and I stand for social justice. No kings, no Trump!
No kings, no Trump! No kings, no Trump! No kings, no Trump! No kings, no Trump!
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Beatrice. I'm from the United States. I left under Bush. I thought he was bad. I did not leave because of Bush, but I did. But one thing that we haven't even talked about, because there's so much, there is an illegal war happening right now in the Middle East. Not only is it just bad, it is completely 100% illegal. Congress has not given any approval. There's nothing. There's so much bad stuff. But we need to, this is not okay. It's not okay for the United States. It's not okay for the Middle East. It's horrible. And I don't know what to do, but we need to make our voices loud. And write your congresspeople, call them, fill their voicemails, everything. Everything you can. This is not okay. And the incompetence of Hegseth or Kegseth or whatever the hell you want to call it. Just, it's insane. But the United States has been meddling in Iran since they overthrew Mossadegh in 1953 in a coup with the CIA and the MI6. And this is, we would have had a completely different world had the United States not meddled in that. It was a peaceful, democratic society. And they just wanted control over their own resources. What a concept. So,
They assassinated him, don't read that part.
They assassinated Mossadegh. Yeah, that was, So, yeah, there's a whole movie you can watch called Coup 53, which explains this whole thing. But I'm digressing, but it's just, we need to talk about this, and we need to contact everybody and anybody that you can and make your voices loud. So, thank you. Hi, everybody. My name is Em. I actually, unlike everybody else I think who spoke today, I immigrated about a month and a half ago. And I'm so, so happy to be in the Netherlands. I wanted to talk today about a couple of things because I myself live my life by the numbers. I am a data girly, you could say. And I wanted to talk about some numbers that some of them you might know and some of them you may not. Trump, our president, has 34 felonies he's been convicted of, as well as having been found liable for rape of Eugene Carroll. We have spent over $25 billion on the illegal war that Beatrice mentioned in the last few weeks. ICE agents have 47 to 48 days of training before they are unleashed on our streets. And dollars total since Trump took office the second time added to our debt is $2.29 trillion. But there are other numbers I think that are more important to talk about. The numbers that represent the future of America and the world, our children. Due to Trump administration policies, it is estimated that over 450,000 children will lose health insurance this year. 3,800 children, including babies, have been arrested by ICE since the beginning of the second Trump administration. 168 children were killed in a missile strike on a school in southern Iran. And scariest of all to me, and I hope to everybody, the cuts to USAID, a program that has saved millions of lives over the years, will cause 4.5 million unnecessary deaths of children in the next 5 years. Those numbers are staggering. But data ironically tells me that numbers are not enough to convince people. Empathy and human connection are what makes change. So I ask you to think of the children in your life, your kids, your grandkids, your nieces and nephews, your little sister or brother, your friends and your neighbors. Picture the lives you want them to have. Safety and security, food and water, play, joy, education and opportunity. And I ask you here today, as well as others, lawmakers and members of our government, why the children around the world, why the poorest children of America, why brown children matter less than the white, rich children of American citizens. Woo! Every child living today has a stake in our future, not just America's future, but the future of the world. Think of what you want the world to look like 50 years from now, 100 years from now, 250 more years from now of the United States, and ask yourself whether children from the U.S., whether of Mexico, whether Russia or Ukraine, Iran or Israel, Taiwan or China, whether 10, 15, 20 years from now, they will look back on what the United States is doing and think of us as friends or think of us as enemies, because we all know that violence begets violence. They are watching American-made bombs fall on their country, and they are not going to look to us as friends in the future. But I think there are things even that are more important than things like potential future terrorists. I think of the children who are growing up today, and if we cured their little sister's diseases, they might grow up to be a doctor and save more lives. If we, instead of sending bombs and instead of sending soldiers, send food and send water and send medicine to these children, then instead, not only are we saving lives today in the short term, we are saving thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of future lives by choosing peace, choosing love instead of hate. You probably remember, and I think he's been mentioned today, little Liam Ramos, a 5-year-old boy in a bunny hat, arrested and imprisoned, scared and cold in the Dilley Detention Center before he was thankfully and mercifully freed. The children and parents there in detention are not being provided sufficient food and water. Their conditions are unsanitary. Mothers are mixing formula with dirty water. Children, little children, like your children, like your grandchildren, your neighbors, they are asking to be able to take their own lives because of the suffering they are undergoing. And when Liam's attorney arrived at Dili, he took video of parents and children chanting in unison, Libertad para los niños, freedom for the children. I'm almost done. I leave you with one final number today, 1,029. 1,029 days until January 20th, 2029, the day that Trump's second term will end. Between now and then, we have two choices. We can be complacent, stick our heads in the sand, and move on with our lives, engage in the privilege that the professor talked about. Or we can stand up and fight. We can use our voices, we can use our talents, we can use our wallets to resist the rising tide of fascism and violence around the world, at home in the US, and even here in Europe. Thank you so much for your time, for coming to this protest, for fighting back against Trump. Libertad para los niños. Thank you.
Oh my God, I'm shaking because I had like a traumatic public speaking event when I was in seventh grade, and so I'm shaking. Okay.
Some say distance may make us spectators. That because we stand here in the Netherlands, we are no longer in the American arena. They are wrong. Teddy Roosevelt said the credit belongs to the person whose face is marred by dust and sweat. Well, look around you at all of us here today. Our sweat is the work of organizing across oceans. Our dust is in the distances we travel to say that democracy is not a spectator sport. It is a struggle. It is a struggle that requires every one of us to show up every single day, to speak up when the light, when the time calls. Eleanor Roosevelt once asked, where do human rights begin? She said they begin in small places close to home. But for us, home is a set of values, not just a set of borders. We are here because we refuse to watch an incompetent, maniacal regime dismantle the founding, the house the founding fathers built, and every generation that has since pushed forward a vision and dream of America.
Yes.
We are here because we know that a wannabe, vainglorious king or dementia-tinged toddler is just a man-child who is afraid of his own people. American citizens and immigrants who are fed up, frightened, and tired of this rodeo. This clown show of incompetence, part two. As I sometimes say, the swamp is swampier than ever. Every one of you here today inspires me. As Heather Cox Richardson has said, thank you for picking up and carrying your torch. Yes. We aren't just concerned citizens. We are a global front. When they attack the vulnerable at home, they attack every one of us. When they lie to the world, they lie to us. And when they think we are too far away to matter and threatening to take away vote by mail, we have a responsibility to make our voices heard.
Yes!
We are 10 million or 9 million Americans abroad, and we are joined by people around the world who know that when the light of American democracy flickers, the whole world gets darker. And that's not to say our empire is perfect, and I'm not a generally a strong fan of empire at all. Yet even so, we are the raging waters that can vanquish their fire, cruelty, and destruction. Invoking the Honorable Dr. King, the day before he was assassinated, in which he said he'd been to the mountaintop, he saw a world where no man is a king and every person is a citizen treated with dignity and respect. A promised land where we are no longer subjects to be ruled, but citizens to be heard. A place where the law is king. We may not see the top of the mountain today, and we may feel the weight of every no, of every setback, and every bald-faced lie they expect us to believe. But seeing you all here today fills my heart with so much hope. We may not be at the summit yet, but we are in this fight, and we will keep on climbing. Today, we tell this corrupt, incompetent, cruel regime, the world is watching. We are the water to your fire, and to you, Mr. President, and your circus of sycophants. We say, see you in November.
Now that is Ilsa, and she is one of our organizers, and she, that queen, did all of our branding, the logo for our Indivisible Netherlands, the website. She is a creative force to be reckoned with, so we are so grateful to have her. And I'm so happy to introduce another of our organizing queens, and that's Taylor. And Taylor is also recent, like, did you all just move here? It was so lonely when I came here. She is a recent Amsterdam resident by way of Philly, Chicago, and LA. She's gotten straight to work with organizing solidarity actions here in Holland, including the Women's March Solidarity Walkout in February and our event today. She's really modest and didn't put that last bit in. She's been listening to me talk for 2 months. From abroad, she's coordinating with the grassroots organizers in the U.S., writes about resistance, class solidarity, and global movements, including a zine. There are some copies of that making their way around. And today she will be talking about the power of economic resistance. I also have a fun note. I forgot about this and was reminded. One of our volunteers with the Minnesota group, named Mary, she made cookies for a small donation to Minnesota Aid. So Mary, maybe if you can like make your way up here somehow and just be like, I have cookies, people will buy them. She says she doesn't want to take any home, so you guys know what to do. So over to you, Taylor. Thank you.
Hello.
You're welcome.
I know I'm not cookies, but I will try. Thank you. So hi, hello, my name is Taylor. I moved to Amsterdam in October. I think there was a buy one, get one deal. We all took the same place. It is a privilege and an honor to be here. I'm very, very grateful.
Mic right next to you.
Oh, can you hear me all? Mic check, mic check. So I get asked a lot, how do I help? And the answer is boycott. Boycott big businesses and major corporations and billionaires. Why give them any more money? And that's a serious question. I want you all to think about that as you go about your day. Big corporations and billionaires lobby and openly fund politicians. The average American doesn't get a say. That's why America doesn't have proper environmental regulations or AI protections, which affects us everywhere. Climate change is real and it's rampant. Americans also don't have easy access to affordable health care or a livable wage. The Supreme Court ruled that corporations are considered people back in 2010. Instead of working for the American people, politicians are bought and sold by corporations. Politicians work for them. They work for the billionaires. The number one thing that funds the United States is consumerism. Dining out, buying cars, electronics, clothes, our luxuries, our little sweet treats, ladies. Going on holiday, it's our Amazon purchases, Whole Foods.
Fuck Amazon!
my type of people. Fuck Amazon, Whole Foods, Disney, FedEx, Hilton, Home Depot, Spotify, Starbucks, Target, Uber, Walmart. All of that is consumerism. It's our little convenience drug. That's what keeps the American world turning right now. We are the 99%. We're shopping, we're streaming, we're watching, we're clicking, we're spending money with corporations and big businesses and billionaires. What happens is you spend your hard-earned money with Audible, that money that makes its way to Jeff Bezos, who invests that money in bombs, detention centers, and politicians like Trump and J.D. Vance. Politicians think that we are consumers. They don't treat us like constituents.
let me break down some more numbers for you. I'm also a numbers person. Amazon Prime is $14.99 a month. I know that there is a yearly package, but I think most of us live month to month. So $14.99 times 12 is $179.88 a year. For there to be an economical impact, we would need 3.5% of the population to participate. For America, that's 11 million people. So $179.88 times 11 million is $1.9 billion with a B a year to a man that will use that money to buy politicians, fund wars we do not get a say in, and build endless unnecessary for-profit prisons. There is a handful of billionaires, literally the 1%. Most of them are either American or own American companies. We all share the same billionaires everywhere. We all shop at the same corporations. We all feed the system. Audible, Skims, Fenty, the Olympics, the World Cup, Tesla, Coca-Cola, Meta, Taylor Swift, I love her too, McDonald's, Palantir, Apple, ChatGPT, the Super Bowl, Beyonce, I love Beyonce, the Oscars, the Kardashians, Papa John's, TikTok, the list goes on and on. We all have vices, and there is a billionaire there to sell you something and to fill that need. International trade and tourism are other major contributors to the U.S. economy. The U.S. is a major importer and exporter of goods worldwide. International travel yielded over $200 billion for the United States in 2024. And with domestic travel within the U.S., it made it $2 trillion. If there was a global boycott of American companies, we'd be hitting them where it hurts twofold, at home and abroad. It's a strong message of worker and class solidarity if all of us globally said no. Enough is enough. By showing the powers that be that we are not consumers, we are not customers, but we are constituents, and we are human beings.
Woo! Yes.
Woo!
Yes. Who's making housing unaffordable? The billionaires, BlackRock. Who's killing the environment? The billionaires, all their private planes. Who's investing and profiting from our oppression? The billionaires, Elon Musk, Jeffrey Bezos, the list goes on. Per the UN, ending world hunger would cost $93 billion a year. That's less than the 1% of $21.9 trillion spent on military budgets over the past decade. And Elon Musk is going to be the first trillionaire in the world. And I want to give you some perspective on that. 1 million seconds is roughly 12 days, 11.8 to be exact. 1 billion seconds is 32 years. 1 trillion seconds is a little over 31,000 years. So we have to cut these people off. Boycotts work. The anti-apartheid movement in 1959 for South Africa started as a boycott. The Montgomery bus boycott from 1955 to 1956 during the Civil Rights Movement, and Gandhi and the Quit India Campaign in 1942. There are more recent examples as well. After Target cut its DEI program in February 2025, the stores started to see a decline in foot traffic. Starbucks stores are closing worldwide. Disney caved talk show host Jimmy Kimmel in September 2025 and gave him his show back. Yeah. And we did that, by the way. It took 2 weeks, just saying. Spotify canceled its ICE ads after saying they would not. And 4 million people have walked away from ChatGPT. It is up to us to save us. We keep us safe, and we've always kept each other safe. Per the Oxford Review, global solidarity refers to the shared commitment among individuals, communities, and nations to stand together in support of marginalized, oppressed groups across the world. It involves recognizing the interconnected struggles addressing global inequalities and taking collective action to promote equality, justice, and human dignity, regardless of geography. Regardless of geography. U.S. women traveled to the U.K. and fought alongside the U.K. women during their suffrage fight.
People across Europe helped people in Nazi-occupied areas. The International Apartheid Movement for South Africa. International. Countries around the world marched for George Floyd. Countries are removing their involvement with Eurovision due to Israel's involvement. Dutch residents have said that they're willing to travel less to the U.S., and Dutch investors are investing less in the U.S.
20%.
Yes. 20%. Global solidarity works, and we need it now more than ever. A boycott of this scale has benefits for all of us in the 99%, regardless of what country you live in. It's a massive show of force that the elites cannot ignore. The billionaires, the ones that we all share, they cannot ignore it. We all want the same things at the end of the day, so let's demand it together. Look around. Many countries are flirting with fascism and far-right governments. Far-right think tanks and groups like the Heritage Foundation, Moms for Liberty, and AIPAC have been pushing and peddling their agenda for years. Let's show them how we feel about that with our money. Money is the only language they understand. Now, I want to be very clear, I'm not saying stop shopping. That's the always, it's the pushback I always get. Please shop away, but shop as locally as you can, please. We are in Europe. It should be very, very easy for us to shop as locally as we can. We need to fund our communities instead of these corporations and billionaires who are funding wars and oppression. By giving our money back to our communities, those trillions of dollars of spending power that I talked about earlier, that money then circulates within our neighborhoods, within our communities, and it helps us thrive and it helps us grow. When we give our money to companies and billionaires, it goes to yachts and bombs and corruption. So shop away at vintage stores, local bars, get your daily coffee at a local coffee shop. There are apps like Libby and Everand and Hoopla and Riverside. If you still have your U.S. library card, I recommend Canopy for watching movies and shows. You can donate to grassroots activists, campaigns, journalists, and organizations. You can go to the farmers markets or directly to the farm if you're able to. You can support local artists at jazz clubs and music venues. I really like Bourbon Street down the way. Absolutely. The alternatives already exist, is the point I'm trying to make. The issue is convenience, right? It's inconvenient to wean ourselves off of these corporations. While you might feel like you're missing out on the quote-unquote rest of the world and pop culture, we will create our own moments and build a stronger village for a good moral reason. There's local paint and sips, there's volunteering at community gardens and farms, antique and vintage shopping, local movie theaters, community sports teams. European sports are better anyway. You can join a book club. You can start going to off-Broadway plays and musicals and comedy shows. Even host potlucks. There are literally so many cheap, non-mainstream things to do in your backyard and with your community, especially in the Netherlands, especially in Amsterdam. The more we go back to the village mindset and start spending time together, the more power we have. What's happening in the United States should concern everyone everywhere. This current administration has shown they do not care about international law. The Heritage Foundation is already planting seeds in Europe. Plans for Palestine are being drafted by Trump's quote-unquote Board of Peace. Citizens of other countries are currently being held in ICE detention centers or they're unable to enter the U.S. at all. And there is an illegal war on Iran. Now is the time to show the force of the full 99% to the 1%. We stand united, we boycott in solidarity, and we give our money back to our communities. We won't be perfect at first. We gotta set expectations, I understand that. But it's about participation. It's every week make a small change in your shopping habit. Only shop at Amazon once a month. Cancel your Spotify this week, then your Netflix next week. Switch to Bolt and Free Now instead of Uber. Public transportation here is great. Everyone's on the bike. Or use the fucking bike.
Yes! Bikes for liberty.
Come on, you fucking Amsterdam.
She said, come on, you're in fucking Amsterdam. Take the bike.
order pickup from a local restaurant instead of Uber Eats, or use Just Eat Takeaway, which is a Dutch company that kind of sort of pays their employees a livable wage. Stop using ChatGPT and switch to Claude, or don't use AI at all.
Yes!
Our money is our weapon, and we have to use it. As Mario Savio once said, this is my favorite part, excuse me. As Mario Savio once said, there is a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, it makes you so sick at heart, that you cannot passively take part. You have to throw your body upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all of the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you have to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that until you are free, the machine will be prevented from working at all. There is a month-long general strike brewing in the United States that I am helping organize from all the way out here. There's one April 5th, and there's another one May 1st. Double trouble. So, with that being said, we need your help. Start looking for alternatives now. People need our help, and the least we can do is help. There are roughly, the global population is roughly 8 billion people. 3.5% would be a teeny tiny 280 million. Who's gonna join me? Thank you.
Awesome, you guys know what to do. We have two really quick, more improvised speakers, which I love. Come on up.
Hi, my name is Mark. I'm Dutch. I was born and raised in this country. Mind you, as on my paternal side, the grandchild of one decorated war hero from World War II, and on my maternal side, the grandchild of one prominent Dutch Nazi. So you can imagine how confused and confusing my upbringing was. But there seemed to be one thing that everybody in the family agreed upon, that was that our kind of rich white people did not go to protests because we respected law and order. But I feel blessed today to be surrounded by people who know that there's no such thing as our kind of people versus your kind of people versus their kind of people. There is only people, and law and order only deserve our respect and protection to the extent that they protect and respect all the people. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Okay. So Greg Shapiro here, the American Woo! Netherlander. Yeah. Some of you might know me because I come from America first, but I moved to the Netherlands second. So if Donald Trump were here today, I just thought, you know, you might like to react to what he might say if he were here today. So first of all, I'm very, very disappointed in all of you for showing up today. You're very, very mean to me. Everybody here, you're very low IQ people. You should disperse peacefully immediately, you know, because we don't want me to break out the fire hoses or the dogs, the tear gas or the dogs that shoot tear gas from their fire hoses. You're all very, very, let me tell you, nobody here is a 10, okay? You're all way above 13, and it's not interesting to me at all. So I think, thank you all so much, because, you know, that as long as you spell my name right, then it more attention for me. It's so beautiful. Thank you all. So are you going, okay, are you going to support MAGA? Are you going to support MAGA for me? If I say yes, justice, yes, peace, what do you say? Why are you so mean to me? I hate you all. I'll see you at Nuremberg 2.0, which we were like, either The Hague, it's so great. Such I hear I'll be staying in the Royal International Criminal Court or someplace like that. And otherwise we'll have the Nuremberg 2.0 in my own ballroom, I think. It'll be ready by then. So thank you very much. I hate you. You're all very mean to me.
Hi, folks. He's hard to follow. My name's Sharon. I'm an American. And my daughter just moved here permanently.
Yay!
So I will be looking for an apartment if anybody knows an apartment. Anytime it's available. So all of you Americans know that you're required to pay taxes to America, even if you're not living in America. And I've been to a lot of these rallies. I'm very politically active back home. I just found this one by chance. I can't believe it. I feel really at home. Anyway, those of you who are required to pay taxes, I'm from the generation that remembers Vietnam. Okay? We marched down the freeways and closed them. And the other thing that happened was there was an organized tax revolt. People refused to pay their taxes to that illegal war and that violent war. And I don't see any movement in America at all these days to refuse to pay taxes. All it takes is putting it in a withholding fund. And if my governor, Newsom, would have the courage to create such a fund, I could put my taxes into that fund until we have a regime that pays for things we want to be paying our taxes for. So I encourage you to organize a way to withhold your federal taxes and tell them exactly what you're withholding and why. Thank you. Thank you.
We have so many ideas. I love this. Our last speaker represents Democrats Abroad. So that's the official Democratic Party organization for Americans outside the Netherlands, outside the U.S. We're in exile. So they're in countries around the world. A core part of its mission is the Get Out the Vote, GOTV efforts, helping U.S. citizens abroad register to vote, request your ballots, and make their voices heard. And we all know that there's a hell of a lot of voting shenanigans about, so it's more important to get that ballot early and send it early. So Audrey will be speaking to us. She has been involved with DA Netherlands for nearly 10 years, contributing in a variety of roles. She's the secretary now, and she supports the organization's operations and helping keep members informed, connected, and engaged. So over to Audrey.
Hello. Thank you, Haley. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
So it's lovely to be here. I know we're all freezing, and the sun could come out and help us a little. But first off, can I get a round of applause if you're a member of Democrats Abroad Netherlands? Yay! Well, lovely to have you. Lovely to see also a lot of familiar faces. And if you are not a part of our organization yet and you would like to be, we really welcome you to join us if you're a Democrat living here in the Netherlands. If you are also based outside of the U.S. and live somewhere else, Democrats Abroad operates all over the world. So you probably have a local country chapter that would also be really enthused to have you. We do a lot of different things in terms of events, but especially, as Haley mentioned, our Get Out the Vote efforts. So I just wanted to come today and talk a little bit about voter registration and why it's so important. And if you are not yet registered to vote, as an American living outside of the U.S., it's very, very important that you re-register to vote every year. So we are only in March, still in March. Year feels like it's been very long already. But you have plenty of time still, but I would encourage you to do so immediately, to go to votefromabroad.org and re-register and request your absentee ballot. That is very simple. Votefromabroad.org. No matter which state you come from, that is the last place that you lived in the U.S., it will walk you through all of the steps to get your ballot and make sure that you can vote in this fall's midterms and any other elections that are coming up that are relevant to your state. So please go to votefromabroad.org and do that right away. Even if you don't know, you're like, maybe I'm registered, maybe not, I don't know, just do it again. It's fine. It's never, you can never do it too many times. I'm doing it every year, telling New York, hey, send my ballot. I'm still from that one place in New York, and I'm still living in the same place in Amsterdam. Make sure it gets to me. My email's still the same, and they send it to me without fail. And I print it out, and I send it back, and that's how I make sure that my voice is heard. And as we know, I see a sign in front of me that says, if your voice held no power, they wouldn't try to silence you. So making sure that you vote is one of the best ways that you can actually affect change. And those of us that are based here in the Netherlands know that, or if you speak Dutch, you know that the Dutch word to vote is stem, which is also voice. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very poetic way for us to make sure that our voices are heard, just as we have been today, and will be made heard in November of this year for the midterms, where we can actually really affect some change and hopefully some positive impact back in the United States. So I'm here today with Sarah, who's one of our members at large. She's over there also holding down the fort with her Democrats Abroad Netherlands sign. So if you have any questions about registering to vote, you're like, I don't really know about this, I'm not sure, should I, or I have a weird situation, come over there, please talk to us. We're here to help you, and we're going to be all over the Netherlands throughout the rest of this year, leading up to the midterms, making sure that any American based in the Netherlands gets their chance to vote. So votefromabroad.org. Also, Democrats Abroad Netherlands, we will be having our annual general meeting on April 12th. That's a Sunday. It will be here in Amsterdam at my office, which is on the Spouw above the rituals store. So democratsabroad.org has all of also our local Netherlands events, including that AGM, which is a really great way to learn more about our volunteer opportunities, meet some of our leaders, and really get involved leading up into the midterms this year, because we're going to need a lot of hands on deck to make sure that all of the Americans, not just in the Netherlands, but globally, turn out and make their voices heard. So please come join us, register to vote, and thank you for listening to me.
Thank you so much, Audrey and Sarah, who's desperately trying to keep the sign from blowing away. So we're coming towards the end of our time together today. That sped by, but I'm so energized. I hope you all are too, and I'm ready to go boycott and consider boycott if I owed taxes, but I don't. Doing all the things. So a quote that I go back to over and over again, the writer and activist Rebecca Solnit, if you don't know her, you should read her book, Hope in the Dark. It's brilliant. She wrote about hope. Hope is not a lottery ticket that you can sit on the sofa and clutch feeling lucky. It is an axe you break down doors with in an emergency. Hope should shove you out the door, because it will take everything you have to steer the future away from endless war, from the annihilation of the Earth's treasures and the grinding down of the poor and marginal. To hope is to give yourself to the future, and that commitment to the future is what makes the present inhabitable. So if we think about hope as repeated concrete actions, we've heard a lot of ideas today. I'm going to sum them up again. So vote. The midterms are so important, but keep an eye on your ballot. Hound your voting office back home. Make sure they get it. You know, check it. It's been signed, because there are shenanigans afoot. Call your representatives from the last place you were registered. Call them and let them know that you dissent. There's a great app for this and a website called fivecalls.org. It gives you contact details, it gives you a script, it gives you like a priority list, because there's a lot going on. So that's a great resource. Join a local resistance group. Start with things that are important to you. After protest actions, because this is amazing, we need to keep that momentum going. Go out into our communities, stand up for what's important to us, and use our voices. And I think it's so important for those of us who do live abroad, find the local groups. This is a global fight. What happens at home, there's a quote, and I don't know who said it, but like when the U.S. catches a cold, everybody gets sick, basically. Like, this is a global fight. Protest with your wallet. Money talks. And protect the most vulnerable. I think this is so important. From abroad, one way we can do that is to look for mutual aid groups back home, but also look to local and country politics. Trump's rhetoric has emboldened a huge shift towards the far right here in Europe and elsewhere. And immigrants and refugees are often the scapegoats and the targets. So look for the people who need help and who we can protect. So I mentioned earlier, small plug moment, we have a brand new chapter of Indivisible for the Netherlands. It's been a big learning curve. I'm really new at this. So they're behind the No Kings, No Tyrants. So the main aims of our branch are to serve as an outlet for Americans living in the Netherlands to come together and engage in civic action in support of democracy, to hold U.S. government officials to account, to inform Americans living abroad in the Netherlands and local allies of legal and social developments that may affect them, to organize direct actions, so demonstrations like today, boycotts, strikes, and to create community with each other and with local organizations. We need each other now more than ever. So you can learn more about the organization via our website, which is indivisiblenetherlands.nl, or this was a last minute idea. We have QR codes here by the protest frog. So if you scan the QR code, it takes you to our link tree, which has our website and our socials and our email and a join page. So do that and come join us so we can, you know, keep this moment going. We're going to have one last chant by the lovely Autumn, who I don't see. Oh, there you are. I was afraid she ran away because her voice left. We're going to have one last chant, and that's the thinking about what we want to see. So what is my America? What does my home look like? Thank you, Autumn. Hello again. I'm happy to lead one last chant with you all. And I just want to say thanks again for you all being here. It's amazing to have this community. So in the beginning, we started with not my America. Now we will say that's my America. Safe neighborhoods and cities.
That's my America.
Affordable health care.
That's my America.
Bodily autonomy.
That's my America.
Investing in education.
That's my America.
Clean air and water.
That's my America.
Inclusion and acceptance.
That's my America.
Funding for the arts.
That's my America.
Protecting LGBTQ rights.
That's my America!
Protecting nature.
That's my America!
Opportunities for all.
That's my America!
Celebrating diversity.
That's my America!
A social safety net.
That's my America!
Closing the wealth gap.
That's my America!
Affordable housing.
That's my America!
Work-life balance.
That's my America! That's my America!
A good start for every child.
That's my America!
Dignity for the elderly.
That's my America!
A force for peace.
That's my America!
Free and fair elections.
That's my America!
Truth over misinformation.
That's my America!
Respect for human rights.
That's my America!
And last, accountability to those in power.
That's my America!
Thank you. Woo!
So our job doesn't end here today, and protecting our democracy takes consistent peaceful action. Be in community with others. Protect those who you can. What's also important? Joy. Make things. Make art. Make new friends. Make good trouble. Be silly. Wear a frog suit. Laugh. Woo! Because do you know what tyrants hate? They hate that shit.
Yes.
With joy and love.
And love.
Joy and love. And love.
And love.
We rise above.
With joy and love. We rise above. Love. We rise
so I figured we would end with a song, and some people promised to sing with me, so it's that time, people. So it's from the gospel tradition, you will know it, and I'll kind of guide you along. It served generations of activists in good stead, from the labor movement to civil rights, and that's We Shall Overcome.
It's a sing-along.
So I'll try to guide you. We're going to see how this goes. Truth will make us free.
The truth.